My name's Arlene Ellis. This is an interview with Mr. David Smith, a resident of Eggleslie Village. The interview is part of a local history project on the history of Eggleslie. The interview is at the home of Mr. Smith on Wednesday, March the 15th. Thank you, David, for giving us your time to talk about your memories of living in Eggleslie. I'd like to begin by asking you when and where you were born.
I was born in the Manor House, Eggleslie, in 1939. And the Smith family came to Eggleslie when my great-grandfather, John Joseph Smith, married Jane Law in 1852. He was a ship's broker and owner, and he became a gentleman farmer as the tenancy of Manor House passed on to his wife, as she wouldn't leave the Manor House. And a pane of glass in a bedroom window with her name written in with a diamond bearing the name Jane Law, 1842. John Joseph Smith commuted to Middlesbrough by train every day, where his office was, and he had a granite path laid from Manor House to the Arms Station, in other words, Stony Bank. And in the east window of the Aislesby aisle of St. John's Church reads, "Mistress Jane Smith has caused this window to be dedicated to the glory of God, also in the memory of her husband, John Joseph Smith, who was for many years churchwarden and of this parish, and died in August 1886. My grandfather, Frederick Walton Smith, born in 1859, would take over the tenancy of the farm from his mother, because the tenancy would be in Jane Law's name. And he married in 1894 a Maud Hutchinson from Bamborough. He also took over Grange Farm and Home Farm, which is the buildings in the middle of the now golf course, Eaglescliffe Golf Course. He ran a mixed farm, a dairy herd supplying milk for the village, and horses took up a large part of his time, as he was a great hunting man and had racehorses and was a remount buyer for the army during the First World War. After the First World War, there were obviously quite a lot of men, and there were some 14 men or so employed on the farm. One of them was a young Luke Marshall, who worked on the farm for 60 years. But as a young man in the early 20s, he was sent down to Hawkswells, which was the engineers in yarn, and he was sent with a horse and a plough, and he was told by my grandfather, with the instructions, to see Mr. Hawkswell and get the share of the plough moved a shade to land. And he gave found Mr. Hawkswell, gave him the instructions, and said, "The governor wants you to move the share a shade to land, please." Mr. Hawkswell put his hand on Luke's shoulder and said, "Young man, we work to thousandths of an inch, not shades." My grandfather had an hunting accident from which he didn't recover, and my father left school in 1928 and had to run the farm because his elder brother, Frederick Foster Smith, was killed in the war. My father married in 1937, and his father had died in 1934. he carried on the horse tradition, and he trained and rode his own horses in races as an amateur jockey, being much in demand and riding for a Sam Hall trainer from Midland. And I arrived on the scene in 1939. War declared September 39. During the war I can remember the sirens and spending one or two nights in the air raid shelter on the farm, several nights in the cupboard under the stairs on the farm with my mother. But I can never remember Father spending a night out of his bed in either the air raid shelter or under the stairs. I can remember going to see an unexploded bomb which landed next to the pond on Village Farm. During the war there were airmen, Canadian airmen, stationed at Thornaby Aerodrome, and they sometimes came to the Pot and Glass, which is of course where this Luke Marshall also went quite a lot of the time. And when they found out that he worked on the farm, they asked him who made the potato rows on the farm, and he'd said that it was him. He did the potato rows, and because they were so straight, the airmen set the sights of their guns before they went on raids on his, set the sights by his potato rows.
Wow,
and
amazing.
So they all bought him drinks. And so he always had a very good night.
In the
Pot and Glass.
Brilliant. Was that done with a machine or a horse?
No, it was done with a, well, actually it was done with a horse.
It was done by the horse.
Yeah.
We still use the horses on the farm.
Yeah, yeah. And at this time, this was after the war, there would be eight or so men employed on the farm. Two tractors, I remembered, but the horses were still, did an awful lot of much of the work. And as a young boy, I enjoyed doing most of the farm work with the horses. A favourite job was on a thrashing day, when the thrashing machine used to be brought and pulled by a steam engine, and then driven by a steam engine, owned by a Mr. Preston of Potto. You've seen the lorries?
Yes.
Preston's of that.
So they used to bring the steam engine into the village?
Oh yes, into the village, pulling the thrashing machine, and then they set it all up, and all the men on the farm, and Mr. Preston's men, we used to have 2 days thrashing.
How sad about your mother with a picnic.
Which was really good, and well, I haven't mentioned that.
How long was the sort of the harvest time then? You're getting
everything
in.
Well, that was in the winter. Thrashing was in the winter.
Thrashing was in the winter.
Harvest time was in the summer, which was done with a binder, and you made them into binder made shabs, stooks, and stacks. That's why the thrashing machine came in the winter to thrash the corn, and because you weren't so busy in the winter. Then in the summertime, when you were harvesting, it was just getting it all in out of the fields.
What age were you when you sort of were doing this properly?
Six, seven, eight. Yeah, but when I was working with horses, I would be 8, 10, and I used to actually be allowed to have a horse, and I would be in charge of it at the age of 10. And I used to love that.
Okay.
Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Sitting on a machine with a horse, pulling a machine.
Yeah. So you had the farm that was workable, and then did you still have the horses that were the race horses?
Oh yes, the racehorses were, yes, and yes, the racehorses on top of that. The workhorses by the... my father took over the tenancy of this farm, the village farm, in the late 40s. and then he bought it as a city tenant in 1960. So that was now included in all the manor house farm. All the horses, all the workhorses by the mid 50s went. And on the farm now there was 3 tractors. And the latest one. Did you watch? Oh, you can't stop that. How can you? No. The latest tractor was a Ferguson tractor, a little grey Ferguson tractor, and that had it had hydraulics and a 3-point linkage, which meant that it could pick up an implement, and you could take it to the field, and then you could put it down in the ground to work. Up till then, all the other tractors had just had, you just pulled them, they like a horse. Mm-hmm. It just pulled the implements. So you couldn't pick the implement up unless you put it on wheels and took it and then drop it down. But that was the most important thing. But the racehorses were still a very big part of my father's life. And I can remember going down to Yarm Station, because a lot of the horses arrived by train. And I can remember going down to Yarm Station, taking them off the trains, and walking them home.
You walked them home from Yarm?
Well, no, sadly, you see, Yarm Station isn't where you think Yarm Station is. Yarm Station then was just behind the traffic lights at the top of Yarm Bank, underneath the bridge that goes over to Aisleby. That's where Yarm Station was. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think Yarm Station. That's what I call Yarm Station. And there was up to the early 50s that we had a dairy herd at the farm, and they supplied the village with milk, which was delivered from a tricycle with a big box on the back which held about 8 crates of milk. And it took a lot of peddling and up the village, and the order that it was done was, the only way to do it was you went up on the right hand side of the village, at the right hand side of the bank, delivering those houses up there, and then you went, when you got to the top, you turned right round and went down to Eastbourne Avenue, back up, and then round down Butts to the top of Butts Lane, so far down Butts Lane, and then round the back of the church, and then it was easy down from the Pot and Glass all the way down the village back down to the farm. And that's the sort of milk bottle that we deliver the milk in. The very one.
For the benefit of the recorder, it's glass. Long glass milk bottle, very thick, wonderful, with your name on it
and telephone number,
brilliant.
So that was the but in about the early 50s they associated human tuberculosis with milk, and so all milk, all the cattle had to be tested for TB, and all milk had got to be pasteurised before it was drunk. And that killed the local straight from the cow. So we stopped and we changed to beef. So that was the end of the dairy herd. And at the end of the 50s, my father retired from race riding, and I became the stable jockey. So I took over in the late 50s, but at the same time, when I was 18, 19, 20, 21, I played rugby for Middlesbrough. So I found it very difficult.
Yeah, to do both.
But, and the weight was a big problem, but I got injured playing rugby. So that put an end to the rugby life, and so then I concentrated on the racing life. But every year I had to lose 2 stone in weight from January the 1st to March the 1st.
The racing season.
Just to get my weight.
Mm. And you raced, did you train the horses like on the field? I know there's a lot of houses here now that weren't here before.
Here's James.
Did you train them round in the fields here?
Yes, they were all trained in the fields here. They came through the village every morning with, you know, with riders on. And
I bet that was some sight.
And yes, and well, I mean, it was our life, wasn't it?
Ooh.
It was our life, and the racehorses were a very, very important part.
Yeah.
My father retired, having ridden 70 or 80 winners. And then the highlight of his training career, of course, was the winner at Cheltenham. Winning the Fox Hunters Chase at Cheltenham, which is on now, in 1982.
Excellent. Now, working on the farm and doing that, where did you go to school? Was it here in the village, or did you go to school?
I went to school, Cleveland School, which started at Greatney, a house called Greatney, which was on Yarm Road, fairly close to where the electric cables go over. It was nearly opposite the entrance to Sunningdale Estate. And I was there for 2 years, and then the school moved to what is now Teesside High School. So I was an original pupil down there for a year.
But you would have played in the area around here, even though you didn't go to the school. You would have also
played with all the school lads, yeah. You know, the school kids. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah, you must have went to the school during the war. Mm-hmm. This was during the war.
During the war.
And then I went off to Scotland for school.
So where the school is now, the new school on Butts Lane, that and all the area around there would have been your playing ground as well as the farm, wouldn't it?
Yes, I'll move into that if you like. The farm was still producing beef. Mm. It was a mixed farm then. And it was still, but the horses were still a great part of my father's life. And the National Press, I have to say this, my National Press described him as a genius with horses, and he often turned the sow's ear into a silk purse, and he was very, very good. And then he won Cheltenham, and then I rode, and then probably in 84 or 5 I decided to retire, having ridden 70 or 80 winners, and my son took over the stable jockey, and so I trained horses for my son.
Wow.
And he retired 5 years ago, old age, but he rode 70 or 80 winners
as well,
so we've all ridden,
yeah,
70 or 80 winners.
It's in the blood.
It's in the blood.
The
winners. Yeah.
In the blood.
So, the changes that I will tell you about, that I have noticed. The first, after the celebration, after the war, we celebrated on the village green with a huge bonfire, the effigy of Hitler on top, strung on a rope with a sword straight through this effigy. And as a young kid, I thought that was marvellous. the sword was going to be mine next morning because I was going to get up very early and get the sword, which I did. I got up very early and went to the bonfire, but no sword. Somebody else had beaten me to it. So I didn't get the sword, but every year after that, there used to be a big bonfire on the village green until health and safety stopped it. But we, and of course as kids, we used to, next morning, straight there with old potatoes in the ashes. And we'd have baked potatoes.
The bonfire.
Well, Mrs. Faber always did to start off with.
Oh, sorry. Then mother
did. And consequently, you know, there was a fire on the village green after that every year. I can remember the village green being scythed.
Really?
By a Mr. Butler who lived on Rose Terrace and made into hay. I can remember the Coit's Pit.
What is that? Oh, the game.
Coits, yes, and there was a Coit's Pit on the village green. But I can never actually remember an organised team game. I can remember as kids we used to throw quoits in, but I can never remember grown-ups doing it properly. There was supposedly a building at the bottom of the green, but I can never remember it. I think it was a cow byre or a cow shed or something, but I can never remember it. So it was before my time. And I don't know where the village shelter was. I think probably everybody had their own shelters in their gardens. Because we certainly had one down at the farm. And there was one here, which was just over there where that white wall is, which we knocked down in when we got married in 63. Was it?
There's probably some still hidden in gardens somewhere.
The school, of course, was in the parish hall, and the building on the left side of the school, which is now the new school, was a farm. Well, Mr. Bretherton was a coal merchant and delivered coal, but I think all the land must have been owned on by Glebe Farm, which sold it at the same time as Sunningdale, so it all got built up. Sunningdale, the school, Sunningdale, and all the other houses on Butts Lane, because there was only, I can remember the bottom house on Butts Lane being built, but the other four were there. The one at the very bottom, which was, I can remember that one being built. Called the Spinney? And of course the house at the other side of the school, which is now the Glen, was where Miss Crisp lived. And it was derelict for years and years and years, and the garden overgrown, and as children we used to go and play in there and pretend it was haunted. Have a lot of fun in there. What else can I tell you? Oh, the church fates.
Church fates
were always in the rectory garden, which is the rectory up here.
Oh, the rectory near opposite me.
Yep, opposite you. Mm. Yes, and it was, and there was, there was a mini steam engine train which went round the garden. You know, every church, and you paid your money,
and
children rode round on it. And there was lots of stalls. There was coconut shies. It was a complete day out, and pony rides. My pony. I had to lead people around the garden for a pony ride, penny a ride.
Oh,
what else? What else was there? Egglescliffe Hall. That's the big house. behind the wall. That's what I would call, we used to call Eggleslip Hall. That used to be owned by the Jones family, a family. During the war, and just after the war, they moved, and a Miss Thompson lived there. And she had the first mobile chair, mobile chairy thing that I can ever remember. It was a three-wheeler. It was a three-wheeler, and the front, she steered it, but it was all enclosed. It was quite big, so obviously to hide all the electric batteries. And there was a lever came up from the front wheel right along everything, and she steered it by this one lever by moving it that way, and the car would go that way, or that way, and it would go that way. And she rode around the village on this thing quite a lot. And as children, it was the best place to go for carol singing.
Really?
Well, carol singing round the village, we knew which were the rich people, and you got money and a piece of cake and probably a drink of lemonade. And that, her house, she always invited us in to the kitchen, and we always had a lemonade, a glass of lemonade, a bar of chocolate and some money. And so, yes, she, that was the best house. But then, of course, after she left, Ashmore's bought it and turned it into offices. Mm. So that was the end of it.
Another change.
I can't think of anything else unless you can prompt me for something.
No, I think absolutely wonderful. I love it. I love the stories, things I didn't know at all. What about this house? When did you move into here, and what was on this road? Is this quite
well,
new?
Well, I've told you. My father rented Village Farm.
Yeah.
And then he bought it in 1960.
Right. So
and we moved in 1963 when we got married.
That's when we got married, yeah. We moved in.
And we have never moved since.
Nice roots to have. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I think I enjoyed that very much.
Well, I can tell you another story.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. We used to have a chap worked on a farm called Leo. He was a conscientious objector. Now, as a little boy, I didn't understand what a conscientious objector was, but we had this chap called Leo who was very, very religious. And one day, working with all the men, down at the field at the bottom, hoeing turnips, I can remember, and me with a little hoe, down at the bottom by the river, right down by the river, at the other side of the river, Clockwood House, which is, you know, on the Leven Road, they had some peacocks. And these peacocks used to call. And have you heard a peacock call?
Oh, yeah.
Hey-o! And this chap, Leo, who was working with us, and very religious, and we were working, and all of a sudden these peacocks started. Hey-o! Hey-o! And Leo thought it was the gods calling him. He dropped his toe and he went off, arms in the air, off, and nobody ever saw him again. He thought it was the gods calling him. It was amazing.
You haven't told the story about the salmon.
Well, that was pre my time.
Yes, I know that.
Pre my time. Another story of they put pylons across the farm, electric line, they put three pylons on the farm. And while we were there, and one day we were, before they turned the electric, before they actually put the wires up, they just built the pylons, one of the men, the workman, climbed up this pylon and hung his bait bag on the very top of this pylon. And when they put the wires up, they found this bag, and my father got into very serious trouble of letting this man climb up this pylon.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have done that.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Another funny story Well, it wasn't so funny.
He's setting him up
now. On Stony Bank. The children used to sledge down Stony Bank, and we did, and of course, but we sledged down Yarm Bank Field as well. But Yarm Bank Field, you know where the pillbox is, mm-hmm. just by that, you could actually get a run, and then you could, when you got to the bottom, if you ducked, you could go under the barbed wire, through the fence, and you could hit the Yarm Bridge if you were really, really going. Now, but then the children just thought it was better to go down Stony Bank. And the although there was a post at the bottom, right in the middle at the bottom, but the council, people used to go down on bikes as well, and the council got really shirty about this, and they thought they'd better put some barriers in to stop the cyclists and the sledgers. And so that's what they did. And we were a bit sceptical about whether they were actually allowed to put the barriers on a bridle path, because you see, horses could not get down. Mm-hmm. But a girl who had a pony at livery once went out riding, and she went down the Butts Lane, and she was going over the bridge, Yarm Station, over the bridge on the Aislesby Road, when a train went underneath and the pony took fright with her on, and it set off and it turned round and it galloped straight across the weren't traffic lights then, but straight across the main road and straight up Stony Bank with the barriers, and it jumped both barriers with this girl and round the church and into the stable yard with her still hanging on.
She was as white as that.
As white as she. And it arrived in the stable yard. The pony, nothing wrong with the pony. The pony thought it was great.
It found its way home.
And it had just gone straight home.
Oh, poor girl. I would have been off.
Well, she stuck on it. Good. And she used to live in the hall.
Oh, brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. Thank you, David. That's
any more funny stories?
Can't think at the moment. We've had a few.
Yeah, you have indeed. Thank you. Thank you very much.